You're listening to MLVC, the Madonna podcast, your place for all things Madonna Louise Veronica Ciccone. I'm your unofficial celebration tour correspondent, Stefan. As you know, we have...
Hi, everybody. It's Ben. I'm back. We're here today with a fantastic guest.
Yes, today on the show, we are rejoined. We had him on a couple seasons ago, and he's back. World-renowned director and choreographer Vincent Patterson, who attended Madonna's celebration tour in Los Angeles. Welcome back to the show, Vincent.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's lovely to be here, guys. And Ben, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thanks.
So tell us, Vincent, what was it like to, it was going to Celebration. Was that the first time you've seen, when was the last time you'd seen Madonna in concert?
In concert, I'm going to say I saw not the last tour, but the one before that.
Or some Rebel Heart.
Yeah, but I saw Madonna in New York at the Museum of Modern Art. They showed Truth or Dare. And had a little kind of setup where we answered some questions and stuff. And Madonna came with Lourdes and was in the audience. And that was so sweet. And afterwards, she came up to me and said, "We did good, didn't we?" And I said, "Yeah, honey, we really did." So that was great. But
that's sweet.
Yeah, but I was really, I had no idea what to expect. And I tell you, honestly, I was blown away. I have to say, and my first thing is, and I can say it because I'm near her age anyway. The energy and power that a 65-year-old person has, I am so sick of ageism. She was tremendous. She was absolutely tremendous. Yeah. She hauled ass all over that stage from one end of the forum to the other, nonstop. I mean, she'd go down under the stage, bam, she'd be up in the stage, she'd be up, she'd be flying around all over our heads, but she never stopped. And, you know, I mean, having known her for a while and long time, 14 years, I could tell that, you know, she wasn't 22 years old, but who cares? I mean, she blew everybody away. And what I also really loved, well, there's so many things I love, we can talk about them, but her sincerity, you know, was I guess it's age a bit, you know, but she seems to have really softened. And the way she approached her audience was so different than the way I remember in the past. I mean, I remember back on the Blonde Ambition tour that I kept begging her, stop saying fuck, fuck, fuck all the time, you know. I think she said fuck once this time and it was part of the routine, you know. But I was so impressed. I was so, so impressed. And she was so kind, you know. She sent me two tickets and my husband and I went and, you know, they got us into the forum room. We were in the second row on, you know, she was standing right in front of us for most of the show. And oh my God, it was tremendous. It was so, again, I didn't know what to expect and I was blown away.
So unlike we Madonna fans, you weren't chomping at the bit to check on the internet what she was doing previous to seeing the show.
No, I had spoken to people who had seen her in London. I think maybe Boston or someplace, I can't remember. But I had some friends who'd already seen the show. And of course, I was inquisitive. And they said, well, you can go on and look at it if you want. And I said, no. You know, I think we're going to get tickets to go. I was planning on getting them. And then Sarah, her kind of right hand, sent me two tickets and said, we'd love you to come see the show. There's a lot of the Blonde Ambition tour there. And you really should come and see what's going on. So we did, and we had a marvelous time.
Oh, nice.
Before we get into like super specifics, what are your feelings on as a collaborator, having those through lines from past work sort of brought forward and then reinterpreted for the show and sort of the theatrical presentation?
Well, okay. This is hard to say, but I'm going to be very honest, right? I think she needs a theater director. Now, she has tour directors who do fantastic lighting. The choreography was sensational. The costuming was out of this world. But you know what? She tells you that this is going to be really the story of her career, so to speak. Mm-hmm. This is the celebration of who she is. And there were moments, but without a theater director, I mean, what we did in the Blonde Ambition Tour, and I'm sorry to keep going back to that, but, you know, I mean, I am a theater director, so I know how to create a beginning, a middle, and an ending in a way that works, that you're doing all of this rather than just one piece, one piece, one piece, one piece. And even though each one of these one pieces was sensational, I felt that she could have used a little help in really pulling that theme together. Mm. Honestly, when the last song happened, she disappeared under the stage and everybody in the forum kind of stood there. Is the show over yet? They didn't know. And then the lights came on. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
So there was no really exclamation point at the end that said, boom, this is it. You know, we are done and we've given you the most fantastic evening you could ever imagine. So that was the only drawback for me, was I wish that she had had, well, of course, I wish I had done it, but I wish she had pulled in a theater director, you know, to really make that idea and that concept follow through as completely as it had the potential to, you know.
Sure.
I love the idea of her celebrating her life, and I love the song list. It was crazy. But again, my husband kept turning to me and said, you know, Vincent, this feels like it's a celebration of your years with Madonna, because it was like up on that screen was Pepsi commercial, the Blonde Ambition Tour, the Express Yourself, even she sang Evita. I mean, yeah. They opened the show with Bob the Drag Queen in Marie Antoinette garb,
yeah.
You know. And then all the way through were reflections of the Blonde Ambition Tour more than any other parts of her career. I mean, she did Open Your Heart on a black chair with a dancer, male dancer on the side, which yep. I did Blonde Ambition Tour. She did Holiday was a line dance, which we did in the Blonde Ambition Tour. Live to Tell, she was dressed by priests in the same exact outfit from the Blonde Ambition Tour. And the priests had those incense censers, you know. The boxing scenes, which I loved, but Donna, Nikki, and Madonna did a boxing scene causing a commotion
right.
in the Blonde Ambition Tour.
Oh, yeah.
Like a Virgin, she was had that red bed there, yep. and her alter ego was, you know, kind of behind her with the blonde wig, the blonde hair, and kind of masturbating her at the end of the scene, as we did in Blonde Ambition.
Well, and the Papa Don't Preach choreography at the very beginning where
that was boom, boom, boom. That was yep. the choreography, which, I mean, all of this was such a joy to see, you know, I mean, it was like, wow, this really meant something to her, what we created billion years ago, you know, even the black piano with her daughter, Mercy, playing. I mean, I brought up a black piano and she got on top and sang Sooner or Later.
Right.
You know, I mean, that was Blonde Ambition. And then she sang Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. I did Evita. And then I had created for Michael Jackson on the Grammys that same exact entrance that they did with the guy who was imitating Michael Jackson. The screen comes down and the silhouette of Michael. That's what I created for the Grammys for him. So it was so much fun. I felt like I was reliving my career with her and a little bit of Michael. But yeah, it was fantastic. I was blown away.
When I thought of you heavily also, it was not as direct an homage, but in Holiday, when she samples the Chic, I Want Your Love, and the whole group is going around in that box, I want your love. Yeah. And I thought that was such a sort of current version of that sidestep that you had for the Like a Prayer group in Blonde Ambition. Were they
exactly?
Were they, you know, everyone was like scuffling across the stage, all as one group.
Yeah.
And I remember tripping out about that when I saw it, you know, when I saw Blonde Ambition, and then seeing that part in Holiday, like that was like probably my favorite moment in the show, one of the favorite moments, because it was so reminiscent of what you did for that. So
I'm not saying that anything was stolen from me. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying it was an honor that so much stuff that she and I created together still kind of lingers in the foreground of her memory, and that she loved it so much that she felt she wanted to bring it back as a celebration of her career. I was so honored. I mean, it was a beautiful thing to me, you know. I didn't see her after. I wish I had. I would have loved to have talked to her a little bit, but I didn't see her. I think she was dead. I can't even believe she could even talk after that show. I mean, she started around 10:15 and we got out after 1 o'clock. So, you know, it was pretty late here. But and it's not the best part of town either. So, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I imagine after a heavy show like that, she's probably not up for entertaining many people.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine, you know. And such a trooper with that, you know, her obviously her left knee is bothering her, but she kept on going and you couldn't tell she had any pain at all. She just kept on pushing. And, you know, the piece that she did with, I don't know what she did when you saw her, but she did a piece with Kylie Minogue here. Did she do that too with you?
We got no Kylie or no, oh. I'm trying to think even if she had done solo, she did I Will Survive or occasionally she would sing Express Yourself, but, that acoustic moment usually never has a guest appearance by anybody. That were you there on the Kylie night?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh wow. That's a pop culture historical moment right there.
Absolutely. I mean, I appreciate Kylie. I've never been an avid Kylie fan, but I like her music and I know I'm pretty sure she battled breast cancer.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's why, I mean, Madonna was talking about being a survivor with those people, her friends who had passed away from AIDS and survivor guilt and what's that about. And then, you know, she brought Kylie up and I thought it was so touching that of all people, you know, she brought somebody who is a survivor. And
yeah.
that piece was gorgeous. I mean, everybody in the whole forum, and it was pretty much packed. Everybody was singing along. It was beautiful, beautiful moment. Very touching. That's what I mean. You know, she was so sincere. She seemed so sincere that I was really moved by her generosity and kindness. And oh, and the other thing I loved, I'm sorry I'm talking blah 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 nonstop, but I love the fact that she brought her kids into the show.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was so beautiful. First of all, Mercy blew everybody away with her piano playing.
It's fantastic.
Phenomenal. And she looked gorgeous. She looked absolutely gorgeous. And then David was there with, you know, playing. I mean, he's not, doesn't seem to be a real picker yet, but playing the chords and looking great and playing with her. I thought that was fantastic. And I think it was Esther. Is that how she pronounces the one of the twins? I think it was Esther who was dancing at one point in the show. So, and they all seem to have this beautiful, beautiful relationship with her and vice versa. I mean, you could tell how much she loved them. And she's just a phenomenal mom. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's so beautiful because, you know, when I did Evita is when she got pregnant and that was the beginning of her whole motherhood.
Yeah.
And so to see this now with these three of the four kids in the show was such a beautiful, beautiful thing. And just to see her generosity of spirit of bringing them along with her and, you know, having them enjoy all of this, what she's about, and what better way for them to understand what their mom does than to be part of it, you know,
yeah.
in a very beautiful, beautiful and supportive way. That stood out the most for me, actually, in the whole show. Just that kind of maternal love I thought was so exquisite to watch for a pop star, you know, to do that. Mm. And, you know, and to give up their own time and to share their babies with all the audience. It blew me away. I was very, very impressed. Very impressed. So,
yeah. A question for you, since you had sort of, you'd seen her back in Blonde Ambition, what do you think has changed in the way that she performs as an artist? Obviously you alluded to, you know, now she's not as young as she used to be.
Yeah.
You know, none of us are, but you know, like what has sort of changed or what do you think has remained the same?
Well, I think what has remained the same is her charisma and her power. I mean, that you can't knock it. I mean, she's Madonna, you know,
yeah.
bitch. But anyway, no, I mean, you know, she still has that. She's not lost an ounce of that. It's matured in a different way, but it's just as powerful as it always was. And yeah, you know, I mean, I think when we worked together on that, I mean, I did many things with her, but on The Blind Ambition, I think she was about 29 or something like that, 30 years old. So half of her lifetime ago. But the fact that she just hauled ass all over that stage nonstop and kept up with those dancers who were all incredible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and she was doing her thing. No, she did not move like she has in other tours, but who cares? I mean, who cares? You know, I mean, and I love the fact that she sang most of the songs, didn't lip sync most of the songs. And I hate to say it, you could tell because she was a little flat at times, but I preferred that. I love the fact that it was her real voice singing rather than lip syncing stuff. And I guess that could also be because when she's not dancing as hard, then she has the breath to be, and that's not just of her, that's every performer, you know, but I thought that, you know, like I said, I was surprised. I didn't think she was going to have the stamina to do it. And she really blew me away. I mean, I just came home just thrilled and applauding her the whole time. I have to tell you a very funny little story about me though. I thought I was going to be very, very cool. I have the original Blonde Ambition Tour jacket, you know, the original one. So I said to my husband, Renee, do you think this is okay to wear? He goes, are you kidding? People are going to flip out over that. Wear it, right? So I wore it. And we go into the forum room and people are kind of, they're looking at me a little bit like, yeah. Nobody said anything. Any other time I've worn it, people come up and go, is that the real, oh my God, you know? So we go out and we're getting ready to go into the arena. And I look around and I see this guy and he's got a Blonde Ambition Tour jacket on. And I go up to him and I said, I don't remember you. Were you involved in the Blonde Ambition Tour? And he said, no, they're selling them in merch. And I go into the arena and there's like hundreds of people in the Blonde Ambition Tour jacket. And I thought, oh my God, here I thought I was going to be so fucking cool. And in the forum room, they're probably going, who's this old guy who thinks he's cool in a merch jacket, you know? But I was like, it flipped the coin for me, but I just had to share that crazy.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Didn't realize that they had brought that jacket back.
A much cheaper version, I have to say, but still, you wouldn't know. I laughed and laughed at that one.
So. That's actually, Vincent, that jacket, the bomber that they're selling, is actually produced by the same company that produced the original version back in 1990. So it's actually like it's almost identical. I think there's the only thing that's different is it says Celebration Tour instead of Blonde Ambition.
And the quality is not quite the same, to be honest. I looked at this guy's jacket and it was like, it was nice, but it was more a merch jacket. It wasn't a really official. What we had was really gorgeous and thick and, you know, really, really does keep you warm.
So the originals also teeny tiny, like the ones they're selling now? Because the ones they're selling now barely fit on my arm.
I know. No, they had them made for each of us specifically. Size and everything. Yeah, it was a very exclusive. I think this is the first time they've ever brought that back. Yeah, I don't think they've ever sold them. Yeah.
Yeah, so. Part of the tour has been not only like nods to her past on stage, but like all of the merch is all like recreations of previous. Like there's a Blonde Ambition, I think there's two Blonde Ambition t-shirts and stuff like that, which is nice because, you know, like some of the fans, I mean, that Blonde Ambition bomber jacket, that's been one of those items that fans have been like chomping at the bit to get their hands on for decades now.
I know. I've had some pretty high financial request to purchase it. And I said, no, are you kidding? It's the only one around. And then I go to the tour and there's like 400 of them.
You could probably still get a pretty good price for your original though.
Oh yeah, probably. But it was so fun. I just loved it, you know, from the first moment of Bob the Drag Queen coming out in the Marie Antoinette costume. And, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, this is so cool to the last moment. And, you know, where she had all the dancers come out in every kind of outfit she had ever worn throughout her career. Very cool. Just so cool. Just what was your favorite part?
Oh, you got
a favorite part?
You go.
Oh, Well, I like the whole second section with the boxing and the sort of erotica heavy era. And I did appreciate that I felt Damien, his choreography for that section also called back to a lot of stuff that you had done in Blonde Ambition, just in terms of like how the bodies were moving and how people were outfitted. I thought that was super interesting. But for the song choices, because that's the section that includes Bad Girl and Fever and stuff. Oh, yeah. I that was my sweet spot right there.
And you, Steph?
I loved so much, so many different moments of the show, but oddly enough, it's a slow moment, and I'm usually like dance queen, you know, like give me high energy. But I thought the modern dance that they did for Justify My Love was absolutely stunning. Like just so gorgeously beautiful, and how they staged it with this, you know, and you probably had such a great view being at the end of that catwalk where you could see them on stage and then the screen behind them where they were like filming on top. So you get this sort of like kaleidoscopic view of
Busby Berkeley kind of image of it all. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
The choreography was sensational, I thought, you know. At times I felt it was a little disconnected. She was someplace far away and they were someplace far away, and you had to make a decision. Where did you want to look? Mm-hmm. But the movement itself, I thought, was innovative and very clever. That boxing section, I thought the movement was sensational, very innovative and very strong. Really, really good. And also the scene where the priests are rotating like Christ hanging on the cross in that revolve up there was
during like a prayer. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, for like a prayer. And then she gets up there and gets involved. But I really enjoyed that. I thought that was unique and spectacular and something I had not even seen before anywhere. And I really thought that was a great moment. That was a great moment. And of course the tribute to those people who had passed away was very powerful. I mean, there were people that I knew, you know, two dancers, Gabriel from that tour and Michael Perea from, I think, the first tour. And that really got me to see those. They were both my friends, and that was very moving, you know, very, very moving.
Yeah, it was interesting to see how she reinterpreted some of those numbers. You know, like you see her do some of those numbers on previous tours, and you're like, oh, there's no way she can top that. You know, like, oh, there's, you know, like, I mean, Live to Tell was such a beautiful moment during Blonde Ambition, and to think, oh, how could she, you know, and then you see it on Celebration Tour, and it's like, it just pulls the rug out from underneath you, you know, like it's just. And I even thought like that just that transition from Holiday into Live to Tell was so powerful. Mm-hmm. You know, there was just some really great, great moments, I thought. But yeah, it's interesting what you said about the theatricality of it, where I almost felt like there were moments where she could have sort of pushed it a little even further and, you know, really cemented it.
Well, she could have pushed the theme. I mean, that alter ego character could have been much more powerful, you know, and appeared at much stronger moments, you know, and done a little bit more interactive with her to really get that point across.
Yeah.
It was a fun idea. It was a good idea. I just didn't think it was as followed through as it could have been. You know, it could have been a big, much bigger payoff, but it was fun. It was great. And her, you know, her giving one to 10 to all the Voguers coming down, that was very, very fun. That was crazy. And they were great. And how about the part where the women dance with no tops on?
Yeah, I know.
You know, that was pretty out there. And I mean, it was interesting for us to look at visually because the dancers were so androgynous that, you know, when the guys got out there without tops on and they all had the same pants on, and some of the guys' hair was down to their back and the girls' hair was shorter than mine or yours, you almost couldn't tell. Is it a guy? Is it a girl? Who's dancing in that group around her? And very beautiful, very beautiful. I love how, you know, the nudity was approached in a very aesthetic way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was nothing bawdy about it or nasty about it or anything like that. It was quite gorgeous. And those dancers, they were so magnificent that they all looked like sculptures anyway. You know?
Those, I gotta say, I mean, not knocking any of her dancers from any of her previous tours, but since Blonde Ambition, I feel like these dancers really stand out. Just
I agree.
I mean, look, again, I love all of the dancers from all of the shows, but I felt like this show really showcased their dancers' personalities more so than previous tours other than Blonde Ambition or maybe even early show where it's like, I felt like you got to know those dancers as people on stage and it hasn't been that way until this show.
Yeah, I agree with you. No, the girly show did it too a little bit. Blonde Ambition really did it. You felt like you knew all of those dancers. And
I mean, there was far less dancers, obviously.
Yeah, I think she had, 20-something in this show.
There's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, there were a lot of people. But each of them were very specific, very individualistic, and they all had a moment, you know, where you really felt that, I can see them, I can see them, I can see them, and I can see them. I was impressed. I really was. It's, you know, other shows have been hit and miss for me, you know, as a complete piece. Of course, I always love her performing and the screens are always gorgeous and the lighting's always spectacular. Oh, the lighting was so spectacular in this show. I thought,
so good.
Oh my God, that big circle over the top of them was beautiful. And that little frame that David moved around in, that was a wonderful piece too. But the lighting was sensational in this show, really sensational. Some of the best I've seen in a long time. I was blown away at that. So you said you wanted to talk Nikki and Donna a little bit?
Yeah. So, hold on, Ben, is there anything else we want to cover?
Well, we do have a couple of questions that have popped up in the chat. The first is people are very curious because this number is a fan favorite. What are your thoughts on the opening number, the Nothing Really Matters, with that light fixture when she kind of comes up in the Gautier look and with the crown? What were your thoughts on that opening?
I thought it was magnificent. I mean, I thought it was a fantastic opening. And she was everything, you know. She was regal. She was strong. She was feminine. She was the queen. That's what it felt like. You know, it felt like you were actually watching the queen. That's what I missed about the ending. I just didn't feel that it really did something for me like the opening did, you know. Mm-hmm. It just kind of disappeared somehow or kind of fell apart in a way. And I don't know why I'm saying that. It's all personal for everybody, but that was just my personal feeling. But that opening, I thought it was terrific. And her just on that revolve going around and, oh my God, with that big circle light over, it was magnificent. And really, she was the queen.
Yeah.
She was the queen. She was like royalty standing out there.
I want to say, because you're not the only person who has said the ending sort of fell a little flat for them. And I wonder if it's mostly just because of the song choice. So, you know, maybe.
Madonna.
Yeah, just because it wasn't this huge super, you know, hit that it's, you know, it's not melodic in quite the same way that some of her other songs are. And I wonder, you know, because presentation wise, that number is huge, you know, with all of those people dancing in her previous looks. And I love her crazy, I call it a cracked out nun look with that, the veil and, you know, like it's just so kooky and weird. And I often wonder if she had maybe started with that and then segued into something else or done like a quick medley of some of the other songs that she didn't sing, you know, like Borderline or Lucky Star or, you know, Music more. You're like, if we had just gotten something a little bit grander in terms of song choice, if maybe the ending would have landed a little differently, but I hear you.
Well, I think part of it is, that's where I felt a big disconnect between the dancers and her, because they were all in costumes that were her, but they were all over the place. And she was in the middle. And even though they were at one point all facing in toward her, they weren't really paying attention to her, at least the night that I was there. They were all in their own world. Mm. So when there's that many dancers and they're all doing their own thing in their own world, it kind of distracted from it. For me, just personally, I would have liked to have seen something where all of their attention stopped and it was on Madonna, you know? Mm-hmm. So rather than all of this energy going around, 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 and she's in the middle of it and she's sinking down under the stage, You know, if anything, she should have been lifted up higher and then the lights go out, you know.
I love this. This is a specialty of this podcast where we fantasize about what we could do differently for Madonna. So,
well, but you know, Stefan, we were talking about this the other day. I've kind of convinced myself that the ending, I feel like that number is the encore, that those three songs are that last act, the Michael Shadow Dancing, that's homage to the Grammy performance at Vincent. Like that's sort of the transition into the encore of Bitch, I'm Madonna. And I feel like it fizzles because it's sort of symbolic that the story isn't finished.
Mm-hmm.
So the show can't be finished because the story isn't finished. That's what I've been telling myself to be okay with it.
I still think it could have been a little more grand. I mean, like that. The opening was so grand and perfect, just so good. And it was all about her, you know, even though they were all coming, it was all about her. And I just felt that she was a little bit not as Madonna performing, she was not lost, but the whole visual was a little convoluted. And I wished it had just, everybody had centered back on her.
Somebody was saying in the chat, and you said something earlier that I wanted to follow up on the question about the placement of the dancers and the amount of travel across the show. And you were talking about drawing perspective. And we've had this discussion on a previous live before. Is that staging, do you think, and I'm curious to ask you this because you'll know, is it being staged like that because for like filming? Because I sat further back than a lot of people and I saw all of that because I was sort of further back. And I was like, I really appreciated how they were all over the stage and it was sort of like a massive presentation. But is that just me liking that because I got to see everything versus what you're saying that it is drawing attention? Like what's sort of your, and somebody else asked this in the chat, so I definitely wanted to follow up on that.
Well, you know, it's just, it's kind of theater tricks, you know. Mm-hmm. A good director will control where the audience's eye goes, you know, and I'm not talking about film. I'm talking about stage here, but the film is the same. That's what editors do when they've got all that material. But since you don't have an editor and it's live, it's important that with a star, that they are the focus of our visual attention. Now, if we wander off and we go to see something that's happening someplace else, something about that group should somehow revert our eye back to the celebrity again, so that we don't even have the choice of just watching them for a long time and ignoring Madonna, you know. Somehow the way that they're choreographed would lead your eye back to her, no matter where you look on the stage. That's what I'm talking about. It's a fine line. You know, it's a fine line. And of course, if you're sitting way back or up in the top there in the back, you do see the whole picture and it might make a little bit more sense, but most people aren't. Most people were on the floor, you know, who could really see the show. You're on the side or the side in the forum and you're not really seeing everything. You're seeing it if you're way in the back, but that's about all. But that's all I'm talking about. Controlling the audience's eye. So you're looking at Madonna and then you want to look and see what's going on over there, but somehow what they're doing should bring your eye back to her again, you know. And I found that wasn't always the case. But that takes a lot. That's really a theater director more than just a tour director. It's a big difference.
Yeah.
And I you know, again, I thought it was a great, great evening. And I thought all the elements were wonderful. The screens were great. The lighting was great. The costuming was great. The whole thing was really wonderful for me. I'm just being picky, you know, because I am.
Well, oh, no, this is fascinating to hear.
I'm a director, so I can't not see those things.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course. Well, and I wanted to comment real quick on the fact that you had said, you know, she's traipsing all around that stadium and whatnot. And I thought, you know, when I saw the show first, I saw it in Paris, and I went the first night, and all I did was stand for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
The next day I woke up, I was spent. Like, I had to lay in bed for hours to recuperate my energy just because I was going again that night. And I thought to myself, how is she doing this? Like, how is she? She's 20 years older than me, and she's performing two nights in a row, and I can barely get out of bed just from standing and watching the show. So,
That's what I said. Bravo.
I'm like, I need her vitamin drip.
Whatever, you know, I'm telling you.
Her training regimen.
Yeah, seriously.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't know. Ben, what was the other questions that we had in the chat?
That was the other question, just about in terms of like the staging and if that perspective was intended for like film or for like the wider view in the audience. Because, you know, we've had several people comment about how much they enjoy Die Another Day when they see it from the back and get the whole scope. And then people who see it from close to the stage are like, meh. You know, so that was a great answer, because that talks about the intention of that staging in sort of conversation with where you are in the audience and how that creates a different theater and musical experience for different audience members. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, so you also, like we were, you mentioned it a couple minutes ago. You also got to see Nikki and Donna while you were in LA. Tell us about how that reunion was.
It was great. I didn't really get to hang out with them that night. I had house guests here and I took them to see the show. And unfortunately, one of them got a call and we had to leave after, as we were doing final applauses. But they performed at Catalina Jazz Club. And it was the second time I saw them there. And they're excellent, you know, and I'll tell you the funny thing. And so anyway, they wrote me and, okay, we want to know your thoughts. We want to know your thoughts. We want to know your thoughts. And I said, well, look, they're just personal thoughts. I said, basically the show is spectacular. I love the two of you. And, you know, the fact that the two of you are doing this together is so powerful. And you could tell everybody in the audience was so elated. And that, you know, it's an interesting place for them because they pay a lot of homage to Madonna in terms of gratitude. Yet what I love is, I think they did about four, maybe five Madonna songs, and they did totally different interpretations of the songs.
Yeah.
So you never felt like they were doing a Madonna song necessarily. You felt like they were doing a song that you were really familiar with and you loved, but you were hearing it through a little bit differently, you know.
Yeah.
But so today we just had a Zoom we were supposed to be a 15 minute and it went on for an hour and a half. And they've asked me if I would take a look at their show and kind of help direct it a little bit. And
oh, wonderful.
And I said, yeah, sure. You know, I mean, the beautiful thing about what happened on the Blonde Ambition tour, and I know I keep going back to this, but because we had to do so much in such a limited amount of time, it was all like we were in a war together, you know, and we had no choice. We just had to form this family, this tight-knit family that was crazy, because otherwise we never could have done it, you know. I mean, I had 21 days to do 17 songs back to back. That was it. And then I had a week and a half to put it all together on stage. So we couldn't even question, you know, we just had to do it. Now, I saw Nikki and Donna briefly when they performed at the Catalina Jazz Club like a year and a half ago, and I went backstage and before and after, and that was lovely. But the thing that's amazing is, you know, I'm still really close with Kevin and Carlton and Luis, and, you know, and that happened in those 3 weeks basically that we spent together. And that's what I said to Donna and Nikki today, you know, in conversation with them. I said, my God, you know, I haven't really seen you guys in 30 years almost, you know, and it's like, or more, I'm not sure, but early 90s, it's like, wow. And yet we still have this connection, this feeling of family. And, so I told him, absolutely, I'd love to help you any way I can, you know, and I'm proud of them and I'm proud of their journey and I'm proud of what they brought to Madonna and I'm proud of what Madonna gave them, you know, and what she gave me and the opportunity to do so many things from, you know, the Blonde Ambition to Pepsi commercial and Express Yourself and the Academy Awards. And, you know, we had a great time together. It was a fantastic time together. And I'm very, very grateful for all the talent that I had to play with around her as well as her. And, yeah, it was great. And one of the highlights of my life, you know.
Yeah.
One of the highlights of my life.
For sure. Somebody had asked me today if we had the chance to ask this question. So I'm going to ask it now because you mentioned the Marie Antoinette look that she did for the Vogue VMAs performance. Was there a contingency plan if they didn't catch the fans when they flipped them?
No.
There was
no
contingency. Catch them or nothing.
Catch it or it drops and you got to pick it up, ladies, in those dresses. So, or one of the guys will run over and pick it up for you. That was kind of the contingency plan, was that all the dancers beware and be looking and be, you know, if any one of them drops, run over there and pick it up and stay in your characters, but pick it up and help them. But I'm telling you, they rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed that fan flip more than anything else. And I saw the relief on their faces, and you still can when you look at look at it again on YouTube. You can see after they do it, this kind of thing happens where, my God, we did it. We actually did it.
I'm sure that number was broken up into two parts. The first part leading up to that, and then the part leading after that, you know?
Exactly.
And then question about you were responsible for choreographing her Sooner or Later at the Academy Awards?
Yeah.
With that earring part, because I think that's one of the infamous moments of it's unintentionally infamous moment where that earring comes loose and starts dangling down on her hair, and she eventually like catches it and tosses it. What, when a performer is faced with a moment like that, is like, that was all her, right? I mean, it just comes to her, right?
Yeah, you got to deal with it. That's why she's such a pro. That's why she is who she is, you know. What I love about watching that again is watching her hand shake, watching her be nervous, watching that vulnerability in front of all of those A-list actors sitting out there.
Yeah.
And pre-Evita, knowing that her whole life she wanted to be a movie star, you know, and to see them all. I sat right behind Sophia Loren. And, you know, when Madonna came up and turned around with her back and started singing with her back to the audience in that low cut dress, you almost saw the crack in her butt. You know, I heard Sophia say, "Oh, my gosh, this is very dramatic."
I love that.
But, you know, the fact that she could deal with that, I mean, that was probably like, what, a $400,000 earring or something, you know?
But you can only imagine.
Anyway, but I just love that you could see her hand shaking a little bit.
I remember watching that live on TV.
Same.
And you just see that and you're like, wow, she's a person. Like,
yeah.
I think at that point in her career, you thought, why would she be nervous performing in front of anyone?
Exactly. And it just made you love her all the more. You know, just made
absolutely
you
more,
because you exactly what you just said, Steph. Yeah, she's a real human being. You know, she's not just a pop star. She's a human being, you know. And
that was also how she.
Go ahead, man.
Well, I was just going to say also how it goes from here to the supreme cool confidence at the end, right? Like you set up that performance to like allow for that space to have that vulnerability at the beginning before it goes into that like just insane theatricality that wraps it up.
I'm telling you. I just met with some friends who are major, major Madonna fans and filmmakers. And I showed them, I have footage. Rehearsal footage of putting that together in a little tiny space. It almost looks black and white on a little rehearsal studio on Vine Street with a bass player, a stand upright bass player, piano player, and a drummer. I mean, it was really like 1940 or 1930s in a bar, you know, rehearsing it. I've got that. I've got all this amazing footage from the Blonde Ambition tour in that room. And my friends are trying to get me to do something with it. And they said, "Oh my God, after, you know, after the Let It Be with the Beatles and also the We Are the World, you know, you really should do something with this."
Oh, sure.
So I don't know.
I have a feeling there'd be plenty of people that would watch that movie.
I think so, you know. And it's so beautiful to see her again in her youth, you know. And the other thing, I'll just say one more thing about it. One part I love in it is I had an incredible assistant, a girl who was really terrific. Her name's Smith Wordy. She's not with us any longer. But as a dancer, she was doing Live to Tell, and I have that filmed. And she's exquisite. And then after that, you have Madonna come out. And I mean, we're in the dance studio. She's just no makeup. Her hair's her hair. And she's got the little Cossack, the priest Cossack on. And what she does, the way she takes that piece and turns it from a dance into a performance from the inside, it gives you chills. It just gives you chills. And you go, okay, this girl is one of the best dancers I've ever seen in my life. But look at Madonna.
Right.
Look at Madonna. Look at what she did. Look at what she does, you know. And so my friends were flipping out when they saw that. They were crying and they were like, oh my God, I can't believe you have this footage. And
I would well, cry too.
Next time I'm in LA, I'm going to stop by so I can watch some of that.
I'm like, yeah, we need a podcast field trip, Steph. Yeah, I know.
So really? Don't be surprised if there's a random knock on your door one day.
Okay.
Here we are.
All right. I'll make some dinner for you.
Right. I love that you got to that we talked about the Vogue performance, though, that someone asked that question in the Academy Awards, because those are the two things when people are like, oh, what is it about Madonna that makes Madonna Madonna? I always show them those two things. I mean, if they don't have time to watch Blonde Ambition and really, you know, watch Truth or Dare to really get it, but the essence of the performance and the theatricality and all of it, it's those two numbers. It's the essence right there. And then you can sort of take them along for the rest of the ride, right? But the distillation of all of it is in those two numbers for sure.
Oh, thanks, Ben. That's so sweet. You know, she called me up before the Marie Antoinette piece and she said, listen, I got to do another piece for MTV and I'm going to do Vogue. And I was thinking I was going to, you know, the guys will wear skirts and Nikki and Donna and I will wear, you know, suits. And I said, oh, yeah, we kind of done that before, honey. We're not going to do that again. She said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I'm not sure. But, you know, I helped with the Vogue video. Luis and Jose really choreographed it, but I helped clean it up and piece it together. And I said, and I did the version of Vogue for the tour. I said, I don't know if I can come up with a new idea, but let me go in and play and I'll let you know. So I had the fans you were talking about from a project with Diana Ross that I had bought on Hollywood Boulevard, and I never wound up using them. So I took them in there just for the hell of it. I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do with these things. And then as I started playing with them, that's when I got the idea of Marie Antoinette. I thought, oh, you know what? This feels like this kind of Vogue is very stylized, foppish movement from the courts of Marie Antoinette, you know. And I started playing around with the whole thing and it felt really good. And I called up Madonna and I said, Madonna, I got a great idea. You as Marie Antoinette. And she says, that sounds like shit. And I said, oh, Madonna, you never change. I said, get your ass down to the studio, see what I'm doing and see if you like it or not. So she came down. I'll tell you another funny little thing that happened that day. But she came down. She saw what I was doing. She loved it. She was like, oh, my God, let's do it. Let's do it. There was an earthquake in L.A. while we were rehearsing. And I grabbed her and we stood underneath a door frame, you know, hugging. And they don't last very long, you know, 5-8 seconds or something. And we finished and we were like nose to nose. And I said, so what do we do now? And she said, you wish.
I love it.
We had a great time together. We always had a great time together. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, Vincent, I know you're a busy man. And thank you so much for coming back on the show. This is really generous of you to take your time. If you haven't already bought Vincent's book.
Oh, thanks.
Definitely go out and get Vincent's book. Tell everyone about your book real quick again.
It's called Icons and Instincts. And it's about my fantastic life from being a poor kid on the Delaware River to having this amazing journey with the icons we all know and love, and how important it is to use your instincts and trust your instincts when you're dealing with the major stars in the world, and to trust yourself and listen to that inner voice that tells you, listen to me, And so that's what the book's about. And I'm so happy about it because it's touched so many people around the world. I recently got an email from a young woman in Saudi Arabia who has read the book three times and told me that it gave her the strength to leave Saudi Arabia and move to Qatar so that she could pursue herself as an artist. And I get so many of these and they really, really touch me. So thank you. It's available on Amazon.com and it's called Icons and Instincts.
Yeah, so it's a fantastic read. So definitely make sure you check it out. So
thank you.
It is.
Yeah. And remember, everybody, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Threads at MLVC Podcast if you've not yet donated to the show. We're on Venmo at MLVC Podcast, or smash that super thanks button on YouTube. Give us a donation that way. If you've not yet subscribed to our YouTube channel, tick that button so you never miss a video. We're going to be going live with other celebration tour attendees like Vincent for the next couple of weeks. Ticking down, almost the end of the tour. So you won't want to miss a review. Vincent Patterson, thank you so much. You're on VLPLA.
VLPLA. My initials, Los Angeles.
That's right. We'll tag you on Instagram. And stay where you're at, Vincent. We're going to say goodbye. Thanks again for stopping by, everybody. Until next time.
We'll be back Thursday night.
Oh, yes. Thursday night. We're going live in honor of the 35th anniversary of the Like a Prayer album.
Oh, yeah. Come with your favorites, kids. We're going to debate. Yeah.